RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Semi-Vacation Val.
Semi-Vacation Val and made it through the hurricane beans.
You did it.
I did it. I have so many fun things to talk about, though, as crazy as that sounds. So in the beginning of the show, let's do hurricane for a minute because I wouldn't bore you with this stuff if it weren't worth it.
Okay, no, well, I'm curious about your experience because I know that you were in a interesting situation there.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I called up and I texted a few of my friends that were in the Carolinas area, both North and South Carolina, just to see if everybody's all right. And it seems like you were the closest to the action.
Yes, I was very close to the action. But first of all, let me preface this by saying that this hurricane was not a joke. It killed God knows how many people in the Bahamas. And I can't even imagine what they're going through and will go through for God knows the foreseeable future. So this is not intended to make light of what happened previously with Dorian. It is, however, to talk about some really crazy stuff that happened post Bahamas Dorian. So it comes up, you know, it's supposed to hit Florida, ends up paralleling the coast or whatever. And of course, you know, it did. We suffered from it pretty significantly, not really horribly, but it was a significant weather event. And I woke up on a Thursday morning to my husband waking me up because there were these tornadoes coming through from the bands, the outer bands. And the alerts were going off on the phones, tornadoes, evacuate, blah, 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 blah. And so he woke me up. We got our little tornado preparation thing in place and we lost power. We ended up losing power because a tornado went through like literally the neighborhood next to me. And I was pretty scared, I have to be honest. That was very close. There were three of them, very close, and it was very frightening. But
the tornadoes are nothing to joke about for sure.
No, and just you never, because you don't know. You know what I mean? Like there's a storm here, it could produce a tornado, and then it does, but you have no idea where. And so it's the uncertainty of it that is really scary because they pop up out of nowhere and that's not something that we normally deal with here. So it was a little nerve wracking. We lost power because of the tornadoes. And by some miracle, these power crews were able to get out and fix the problem and bring our power back by, I would say, around 2, I think.
That's remarkable that you only spent a couple hours without it. That's remarkable.
Yeah, it was great. You know, we all got our generators out and put our generators on and then all of a sudden power's back. And it was like, wow, that's amazing. Now let's see if we can keep it that way. So we're watching the coverage of the storm and there's this coverage that starts of somebody. We don't know who. I haven't done all the research into it today. We don't know who, but somebody decided it would be a good idea to drive their red brand new Jeep Cherokee onto the beach in Myrtle Beach. They drove it onto the beach and they got out because I guess the water came up. So they're on the beach now in the middle of this hurricane with the storm surge, which we ended up looking out because the water was pushed offshore by the winds switching directions. So like, I don't know what's going on in some coastal areas. I haven't gotten to look, but for the most part, I think we really did well in South Carolina. North Carolina, maybe a different story. However, so this became like a fixture, Frank, all day, was these reporters standing at this Jeep, which was being washed into the Atlantic Ocean. And it became a meme. And there were crowds of people down there watching it. It became like a cult classic staple of Hurricane Dorian. And the reporting on it was absolutely hysterical. We're an audio show, so it's really hard for me to show you guys. But if you look for some of the reporting on this, like the newscaster standing in the middle of the hurricane right in front of the Jeep talking about how...
Is that the image that's at the top of the Drudge Report right now?
Let me see. Yes.
That's it? Who the hell put the Jeep there?
I'm telling you. That's it. That's the Jeep. And so kids started doing parody videos of being the reporter with their fake little cars in like a lake. It turned into this internet viral sort of a thing, because like the reporters were on the actual broadcast station saying, don't go down there, it's dangerous, we'll show you the Jeep. Like, legit, that's what they were saying. Yeah. Like, we will show you what happens to the Jeep.
Stand back. We are hurricane proof.
Yes, we.
We have special hurricane training. Please stand back and we will tell you how hard the wind is blowing.
So throughout the day, as things kind of settled down a little bit more, we got some funny stuff happening. So this is one of the things. I'm just going to play it because you can't see it, obviously. So I'm just going to play it. But just picture this. Picture this. Here. This is somebody standing next to the Jeep. He's in a kilt and a raincoat. Nope, it's shorts and a raincoat with his flips on, playing the bagpipe for the Jeep.
Is the Jeep still there, or did it get consumed by the ocean?
Well, that's the funniest thing ever. So I don't know if anyone else is going to find this as funny as I did, because I'm sort of local to the area. But the police eventually came down and started, you know, acting like police do and ticketing everybody who was standing there. Because it was, you know, the Atlantic Ocean was not a happy camper yesterday. It wasn't really the safest place for people to be. But, you know, those people knew we were in the middle of a hurricane. You probably shouldn't be standing on the beach in the ocean. I mean, I'm just a personal responsibility sort of a person. So this morning, the police put a tweet out, and you can't see it. But it's a big construction vehicle, and it's just a caterpillar, and it's just literally a camera focused on the going forward, and it's a fast moving caterpillar driving by, pulling the Jeep out of the beach with a big hole in its window, and it's the Myrtle Beach Police Department. They just tweeted the Jeep is off the beach, but it's literally just a shot of a caterpillar.
I guess this is it. You have to distill this down to the easiest thing, the easiest headline. Look, everything.
No, but it's funny as hell, Frank. I'm telling you, it's like almost like one of those scenes where somebody just slowly crosses the camera angle and disappears off stage right.
Getting hooked.
Yeah, it is so funny.
Well, you got to send it to me because I can't see it.
I know.
We'll do that after the show, I guess.
But it was. I'm laughing so hard because so many little things came out of this, like memes and videos and people doing crazy crap. Somebody tied a buoy to it. It was just, the day was spent obsessing. In the middle of a hurricane, you'd think there'd be other things to cover, but the entire day locally was spent covering this Jeep.
And speaking of other things to cover, I mean, there's quite a few interesting tidbits that started getting passed around the internet last night.
He completely says we're done with the Jeep, Tracy. Let me change the subject now before it goes too far. What are you talking about?
It was the World Trade Center 7, Building 7 News. There was the General Mattis book about Iran and yes. Washington, D.C.
What happened with Building 7? I didn't see that.
Well, there's more. Hold on. Now, this one I have. I have to get out of here. This is a major unit. Now, you know that right now there's a couple of New York City fire departments and their chiefs.
Yes.
That are already saying we want to take a better look at this. And we already know about what architects and engineers are doing. But especially now that we're 5 days away from another anniversary, this is from a Free Thought Project. Major university study finds fire did not bring down Tower 7 on 9/11.
When we covered this the last time, and he might be listening, so just, you know, all due respect. Like, when we covered this last time, I got an angry message from somebody that followed me on Twitter that I had conversations with, you know, for a while previous, saying that he could no longer follow me anymore because how dare I talk about these conspiracy theories and I can't believe you're one of those people and whatever. And later on, he apologized and it all got ironed out. But I just want to preface this by saying, if you're not open to asking questions about this, this might not be the segment for you to listen to. So go ahead.
Well, it's just one of those things to talk about the free fall speed and what's going on and how we're just talking about fires from a couple of blocks away from where the greatest damage was done. And once again, it has nothing to do with denying that countless lives many lives, thousands of lives were lost that day. There's no conspiracy about that. But there is for a long time, the clamp has been put down on any really in-depth questioning on the subject. And I think that this is pretty significant what's going on now, even though I wonder if how far down the road we are, if it's going to be taken very seriously and if it's going to be getting the news coverage that it deserves. I mean, you think about it, the Hurricane Dorian news coverage and the red Jeep. Now I have the context for the red Jeep, and there it is at the top of Drudge Report. This is this is all the news there is for anybody. Mm-hmm. You would think that something like this would be on par with all that stuff, but it usually takes a back seat to whatever is the flavor of the day, the flavor of the week. And of course, this is just the opening salvo of hurricane season. The Democrat town hall, so what was it, 7 hours of climate change? Oh, how convenient, because hurricane season ends in November, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, man, lot.
What else? What else? What was the other thing you were going to talk about?
No, I just throwing it out there about whatchamacall, his General Mattis.
Yes. So I saw that. So they thought that it was going to be this big. So General Mattis put out a book, and they thought when I say they, I mean every reporter that doesn't report the truth, which is what, like 70% of them?
Yeah.
Thought that it was going to be this big anti-Trump, you know, memoir, when in actuality, so they had him on talking about how bad Trump was and blah blah blah, and pitching his book up the wazoo. And then when the book came out, he basically says that Obama refused to prevent an attack on U.S. soil, basically because of the Iran deal. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, that was part of it. Which honestly is, first of all, I trust the I trust the word of Mattis on that. Just his telling of that carries a lot of weight. But not only that, there's other things that you can bolster that kind of behavior with, like the shunning of Operation Cassandra. That was it. Cassandra, is that when the DEA was working against Hezbollah and all that stuff, and it was pretty much shuttered because at the time they were trying to go against, they're trying to get the deal brokered with Iran, and they didn't want to actually prosecute international drug trafficking.
Yeah, that was it.
For that reason. So you have Cassandra and you have this. It makes it, I know you could say, well, if any kind of official source or military officials, it's very hard to trust anybody. Well, the behavior lines up completely with what we know about what the DEA was up against and how they were stifled from doing whatever job that they were on because of this damn deal. We know Ben Rhodes and his concentration on how to sell this to the public and creating favorable narratives and starting negotiations with prior regimes. And I mean,
it's pretty scary.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the lengths to which he was willing to go for what? For a country that screams, you know, honestly, literally death to America at every chance. And look at the situation we're in now because of him.
I have to jump. You know, what I have to do. I have to jump back into the article that Finch wrote for Uncovered DC about Iran, because there's a lot of people, and myself included, when it comes to the Middle East, I always just try to sit back and shut up and read, because I don't know. You don't know who is really wanting war or conflict or regime change for one reason or another. But from what I've gathered, that out of all of the phony objectives that we have had, or the misguided objectives that we have had out there in the Middle East, for destabilization and capitalizing on one resource or another or whatever the hell is going on out there, that there was actually a legitimate threat of some kind with Iran that was overlooked for one reason or another, that there's a that whereas people should have a skeptical view on what's been going on in the Middle East, that administrations like the Bush administration did so much to ignore or completely overlook what was going on in Iran, that there was a legitimate threat that will now always seem dubious. Any kind of trying to address what's going on in that country will always seem dubious because of all of the missteps and all of the corruption that has gone on in previous campaigns out there.
Yeah, so. That's the thing that always sucks about it, too, because there's always this pessimism or sort of speculative pessimism about foreign policy and dealing with other countries because of what you just mentioned. Like, people never trust anything.
Yeah, it's hard. Hard.
Yeah.
Even now.
I'm in that position. I don't trust anything either. Even when it comes to, I am not one of those people that I don't usually comment on foreign policy moves. We've talked about this a lot. I just don't know enough. But, like, I'm not one of those people that immediately thinks that anything Trump has decided to do is the right decision. Because I never know. You, it's one of those areas with the military where you really don't know what the hell is going on behind the scenes, and nobody does. So these armchair quarterbacks that come out trying to make decisions, like either anti-coverage or pro-coverage, without really knowing what intelligence is behind the scenes and what's going on, like, there's no open source manual for the military action. There is for other things. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, there isn't. And that's why when I read stuff like this, it just makes me wonder. Doesn't put me into a hard stance on anything, but it does make me wonder. Because whereas I do not want any, I don't want a war. I would not be behind a war with Iran or anything else. I'm glad that the drums of war have really quieted down with this, the saber rattling that was going on for a little bit with Venezuela and everything else, that none of that has come to pass. The shooting down of unmanned aircraft has not come to blows. The whole oil tanker seizures that were going on with between the UK and Iran. Whatever the hell, there are so many interests at play with all of this stuff. That's why it's almost impossible for anybody as ill-informed as us, and I would have to imagine that even the most informed are ill-informed at this point.
Yeah.
That's the hard part.
Think about this for a second, too, before we jump, because I have a bunch of clips to play. Compared to other administrations that we've experienced, this is like the most peaceful we've been in a really long time.
On the world stage, yeah.
Things going on, but
there are things. I mean, there are definitely still operations in play. We still are overly involved militarily around the world, but most of those, all of those things were already on the table.
Yeah.
So we're starting to see some things showing signs of slowing down. But most of the tragedy of this administration has been perpetrated domestically.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Again. Holy. Thank you. Helga just delivered me pancake syrup and yogurt with granola and strawberries.
Wow.
Helga, come here. I'm not used to this. This is... Say hello to everyone again.
Hello, again.
Hello there.
Hello.
Thank you for this breakfast, Helga.
You're welcome.
You're amazing.
Thank you.
Wow. Well,
Now put it in the refrigerator, because she still has 25 minutes.
I can't eat it yet. No, but this is going to be great when I'm done with the show. Thanks, I love you.
I love you too.
I'm sure that everybody out there is happy you're feeding me.
Yes.
See? Look at this. This is...
No. You leave this right here. Thank you very much. Sorry about that.
All right.
But yeah, it's domestically, yes, that's absolutely true and sad, but true. I'm just very happy. I'm happy about, I'm not thrilled, but I'm happy about the way President Trump has conducted us on the world stage in terms. He's using the power of the purse is what he's using. Mm. You know, he's doing sanctions and.
Well, and you think about sanctions and tariffs and all that stuff. You think about the trade war that everybody talks about with places like China. And then you see Biden talking about wanting to put tariffs on China over emissions because of all their coal usage.
Well, I'm glad you went there.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable what we heard coming out of all this stuff with climate. It's really fantastic if you ask me.
It is, and I went there too because I have a bunch of little things that maybe you guys have heard before, but I just couldn't let them go. This is Elizabeth Warren from the climate change debacle that was on. I'm so glad they're doing this, Frank. Because it any normal person with a half a brain knows that this is absolute gobbledygook. Ready?
Mm-hmm. What is your opinion on the prospect of nuclear energy to help replace fossil fuels? And what do the risks outweigh any potential benefits?
So you rightly point out about nuclear energy. It's not carbon-based. But the problem is it's got a lot of risks associated with it, particularly the risks associated with the spent fuel rods that nobody can figure out how we're going to store these things for the next bazillion years. So here's how I see it. In my administration, we're not going to build any new nuclear power plants. And we are going to start weaning ourselves off nuclear energy and replacing it with renewable fuels. We're going to get it all done by 2035, but I hope we're getting it done faster than
that. Yeah, there you go. Now, all by 2035. Yeah, what she's going to do is she's going to employ tens of millions of hamsters to run on wheels, and we're going to build up static electricity to run New York City.
Look. Not for nothing, but nuclear energy is actually very, very safe until there's a disaster.
Yeah.
But really, it is. It is. And there was some interesting stuff going on might as well talk about this now. I was doing some research in the Google release documents. They banned a website called ECAT, where it's a gentleman, I forget his name, damn it, it was just last week I was researching this. But anyway, he invented a machine for cold fusion, basically free energy, basically. And Google is actually in the business of this technology. They want to be the spearhead behind cold fusion, if it's even something that they feel they can prove. So they're either doing it to stop it from happening because they want control, or they own, you know, they want the oil industry to continue and all that nonsense that comes with it, or they want to own the technology to become even more powerful than they actually are, or they're No, those were the only two. I don't think there's another option. I don't think there is. But they, you know, this is Google, the tech company, Google, the search engine, Google, do no evil. Google is involved in energy. Just saying.
Yeah, and they're all involved in genetics, too.
Yes. And we'll get there. We will get there. But there's Elizabeth Warren saying how we're not going to have any energy anymore. Here we go. This is funny. This is from the RNC. It came out today. This is basically, I can't stop it. This is what's coming out. This is generally the theme from this climate change thing.
Okay.
There's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking.
We're going to be okay if the vast majority of the world goes vegetarian immediately.
Coal burning plants. No one's going to build another coal burning. We got to shut the ones down we have.
Do you ban plastic straws?
I think we should.
I love the vision of the Green New Deal. Do away with commercial air travel and a lot of other things.
We have to take combustion engine vehicles off the road as rapidly as we can.
What about offshore drilling for oil? Would you ban it?
Yes. Absolutely yes.
Yes. Some of it is with light bulbs. Some of it is on straws. Some of it, dang, is on cheeseburgers, right?
Ban everything, Frank. Ban it all. Ban it all. Ban everything. Ban everything.
Oh, yeah.
Literally.
You know, Wednesday night, I was doing a little bit of a darker show, and it was all about the wonders of cannibalism. And because, you know, some intellectuals in these circles are talking about how we should probably, we should start eating human beings to help the climate.
No.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And not
they,
only that.
They won't let us eat cows, though?
Can't eat cows. We have to start eating humans. I don't know where they're going to get the humans from because we're not even breeding over here in the West.
Well.
But the other thing is they've been pushing a lot of insect-based diets lately. I mean, you can find a lot of material on that in the last couple of years, pushing. And then we're talking about CNN, the UN. There's so much. There's so much out there. People pushing insect-based diets, cockroach milk, protein bars made of crickets. This is a serious group of very mentally ill people. Very mentally ill people, and they keep up with these tropes, and I don't know. There's obviously no way to shut them up or stop them. I mean, you want to stop global carbon emissions. Think about all the hot air that
coming
came out
of them.
Coming out of them. 7 hours of hot air.
If you
just shut down that town hall, they probably would have lowered the global temperature a couple degrees.
Ted Cruz said something funny. Okay, so no nuclear, no coal. Say nuclear, Frank.
Nuclear.
Ah, damn it.
No, I've been practicing. New clear.
Yeah. For those of you who missed it, Frank usually says it wrong.
Used to
say it wrong. I'm trying to make myself feel better. Why don't you just let me do that? No oil, no coal, and no gas. Electric's okay, but all power plants that run on coal or natural gas will be shut down too. Planes, I guess, will run on pixie dust, and you'll put a windmill on the hood of your car.
Yep.
And just so you know, Ted Cruz was challenged to a gun debate by Alyssa Milano.
He accepted. Now, is that getting organized right now? Is that actually going to happen, or is she just? I wasn't serious.
No, she actually, instead of the debate, she has said to enormous ratio that. She has a tweet here I just saw called, it says, "Be the reason people feel seen," whatever the hell that means.
Oh,
she said that she's going to go meet with him. I'm trying to find it. She tweets too much.
Oh, is she opting for a private meeting now?
Yeah, it says,
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. "I'll be meeting with Ted Cruz on Tuesday about guns. We don't agree, but if we can talk with mutual respect and humility, maybe, just maybe, all of us come together to affect
Satan.
Positive
Satan.
Change."
Okay, Satan.
I enter this with an open heart, ears, and mind. Yeah.
And
I hope
open
he
legs.
Does the same.
Open heart, open legs. Yeah.
Yeah. Hashtag N-O-R-A.
Right. Yeah. No, she's a brave, brave, brave woman who peaked at 12 years old when she starred in Commando. Yeah. She peaked at 12.
And she peaked at 12 and then was irrelevant. I don't know why people even pay attention to her. But in addition to that, did you see what San Francisco has done?
No. What did they do now? I know that they just recently designed walls that pee back at you.
No. We're down a level from that, Frank, to them just passing a resolution calling the NRA a domestic terror organization.
Oh, nice. Nice. While they have masked bandits directing traffic and calling all of their white citizens racist assholes.
And the bubonic plague spreads around like wildfire. Nina Burleigh, who is apparently a blue checkmark journalist from... I don't know where, because she's probably not working right now, has 41 retweets on this and says, "Looks like Dana Loesch won't be able to take the kids for a walk on the Golden Gate Bridge anytime soon."
Yikes.
They're okay with this.
Tracy, I know a lot of people don't like when I say we need to negotiate a divorce.
Yeah, I know.
There is no... no changing what has been done.
No, and it's just how much worse can it get? And it's
just going to be a matter of time when people just start realizing that all of the doors have been closed and locked and that there's nothing else to do. There is no changing what has been done. They hate you. They hate you. They see people that are not like them as subhuman, but they still need your money. Because if they were actually invested in their ideas and they were invested in liberty at the same time, then they would have been asking for a divorce a long time ago so that their experimentation can go on without a hitch and without having to be tied to you. But they are not.
No.
They are not committed to liberty. They are committed to domination. And that's it. So they need your money, and they don't want you to go anywhere. They will continue to talk about their own rights and whatever, but you have no rights, and they hate you. And I'm sorry, but this is the only way it's happening. The culture's sick. You can purge the government
How sick is the culture really, though? Because I think if we don't have a majority who think that this is ridiculous, we're close to it.
Oh, I don't know. What are the vote totals? What are we looking at here?
What are the real vote totals?
I don't know. All I do know is that this minority here is this loud vocal minority here is they're not changing, and that's not going to be shifted at all. And it's pretty much this is the messaging that is pumped into the schools. All right. It's not just the crusty old Elizabeth Warren and people like her. There are generations of children that are getting this programming beaten into them every day.
There are generations of children with parents who tell them it's all bull.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, there's that too. But you have to understand whether or not, no matter what we have here, is you have two factions. One side is uncompromising. The other side is a little bit more open-minded, but if you can't bring two people together that are not willing to agree on some basic tenets of how a free society should work,
you're right.
You need to have everybody willing to agree on something that is that's flexible and also sturdy, and you don't have that. So eventually, there's going to have to be some kind of a separation. And you know the thing here, and when I say divorce, I don't even need to go as far as saying secession and the breaking up of the union. All we really just need is for somebody, some kind of movement to really reinstill federalism and the lines that are drawn between state and federal action. If these loons in San Francisco can only draw from people in California to create this kind of a societal, I don't know, outcome that they want, they're going to have to come to some real stark decision-making right there, because they're only going to have basic resources to work off of. Whatever you can generate in state, there's going to be no pacifiers, no crutches coming from outside of the state. And they just have to go from there. And you know, reason is going to have to overcome all. That's it. So
that's too common sense.
But that's also what's on the books.
No,
it's already there. That's the
I know,
thing.
But we don't follow the books. The books don't exist.
So then what are we doing?
Exactly. We're like in a free for all. But I really do believe that we're closer to beginning to take this back than a lot of people realize.
Well, let's do it then.
It's a lot to reverse, but it's like, for example, who loves Meghan McCain? Raise your hands. Anybody? Okay, I knew it would be quiet. I don't like her. I think she's horrible. However, she likes her guns. And so she was on our favorite show, The View.
Oh.
Responding to Beto, saying that, yeah, we're going to take your guns away and you're going to give them to us. Which will never happen. Ever.
Oh, it's a voluntary buyback, though, or mandatory buyback.
Mandatory buyback. I don't know how they can buy something back they never owned to begin with. But that's an entirely different story. So Meghan McCain comes out on the View and she says, She says there's going to be a lot of violence if people keep talking about confiscating guns following the Odessa mass shooting, which coincidentally, the Odessa mass shooting was perpetrated by somebody who was a huge Bateau fan who had mental illness, did not pass background checks, and got his gun illegally. Amazing. Little talk about that.
Yeah. They want us to live in a country full of people like that, and we have no recourse to defend ourselves against them.
They are only interested in taking our guns away so they have power.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know the other thing there too is I'm sure some of them are really true believers in the stupid line of logic that if you somehow ban guns, that you're going to take away the tools for people to commit atrocities.
No.
There's some people that believe that. But the other thing here, too, is I think that, and also concentrating on the culture here and concentrating on our rights and how ingrained it is and how long and arduous a battle this would be to wage a war against guns. It's also one of those topics that's a mainstay. You know, they have no ideas, but they know that they can always put their eggs in the guns basket because it's an issue that will probably be around for a long time. And even if the entire party just exists to fight guns, at least the party will have something to fight for decades.
But they don't even understand guns. The
exactly.
People,
well, yeah.
They don't even understand them at all. Like I sent you that thing last night. I don't know if you got a chance to watch it.
Which?
The video that I sent you like late last night.
Did you send it to my text?
Yeah, you answered me. Were you?
Wait, hold on. Let me go back.
You said you'd watch it after something else. I said,
oh, yeah, yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's basically a video from this guy, John, who says it's refuting every gun control argument. And it's really, really good. And they don't even have a basic understanding of what guns are and how they work and what they mean. And, you know, how do you debate somebody who doesn't even... You know, like, I don't know. So O'Rourke goes on to say, well, McCain says, I'm not living without guns. It's just that simple. It's basically out of my cold, dead hands. Come and take it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So Beto says that her remarks are not helpful because you have people on TV who are almost giving you permission to be violent. And saying, you know, this and this is going to happen. When someone says, quote, if you do this, then this will happen. Almost as though that's a natural response or maybe even something that should happen or deserves to happen. Yes. He predicts also, by the way, Frank, that the vast majority of people would ultimately follow a gun buyback law, even if they personally oppose it. He says, quote, I think many will see in this national interest. I listen to gun owners and non-gun owners alike who just say that the current level of bloodshed and violence and death in this country is unacceptable. Yeah. It worries them. It worries their kids, and they want to do something about it. And I can't escape the conclusion that even universal background checks and red flag laws and ending the sale of weapons of war.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay.
Would not be enough to significantly change the outcome.
Yeah, I heard that they're fighting. I heard that they're fighting the Taliban in Afghanistan with slingshots too.
That's actually true.
Weapon of war.
Yeah.
Slingshot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm sure, and there are plenty of people out there who share that opinion that is based totally on trauma-based mind control of the media and all that. And O'Rourke is a complete fool. He is a mouse-faced idiot. And I don't know. It's almost to say, oh, well, this is very concerning that Meghan McCain would make such a remark like that. It's almost as if a rapist is saying, very, very concerning that my victim has promised that they will fight me if I attempt to rape them.
Oh, you are so smart, Frank.
Yeah, it's very, very, this is very, this is very concerning that all of my potential victims said that they would fight me if I try to rape them.
Cannot believe that you did that just now, because the next thing I was going to talk about, you had no way of knowing this, guys. He had no way to know this. Feminist tweet. You ready?
Oh, yeah.
When you tell women and girls to learn self-defense or carry weapons against rapists, you're not reducing rape. You're just saying, quote, let him rape someone more vulnerable. Stop calling for dystopia. Start working to end the patriarchy.
Oh my God. So you're saying, and it's what I'm saying, mentally ill, deficient. These are deficient people to say that when you are encouraging women or underweight men, anybody who would be a little bit more vulnerable physically or in any kind of let's be honest. The only reason why that female police officers work is because they have a firearm on them. Okay, Rob and I were in a we were in a spot that we like to go to after we work out on Thursdays, and we're hanging out and we're having an acai bowl, and you know, this little 5'2" Connecticut female police officer walks in, and we start thinking we started saying, you know, she doesn't have that gun on her hip. What the hell is she going to do to de-escalate a really serious situation, especially when you're going up against aggressive, large men and stuff like that?
Literally, it's nothing.
It's the firearm. It's the firearm that allows the 70-year-old woman to level out the playing field against a 35-year-old bodybuilding man. It's the firearm there. So to encourage women to go out there and defend themselves in a meaningful way will only encourage rapists or any kind of violent thug to go after a person who is even more vulnerable. That person's not allowed to have a gun?
Yeah, no, I know. Not only that, but you're supposed to sacrifice yourself for that person?
Yes. Disarm yourself. Take the rapist on yourself, because we should become. They want everybody to become victims. They want that stuff. There's no way you're going to negotiate rape away.
Listen, she thinks so. You want to hear the rest of the thread? It's pretty scary.
Yeah. Well,
I'm going to read the rest.
Have you ever met a feminist that wasn't scary?
No.
Go ahead.
Patriarchy wants us to believe that rape has always existed and always will. That rape is intrinsic to masculinity. I don't know where the hell she's getting that from. This myth serves patriarchy by transferring all consequences of rape, including shame and blame, onto victims. Patriarchy stays unaccountable. Rape somebody. See what happens to you when they report it. Unaccountable. It holds people so unaccountable that idiots like Christine Blasey Ford use it as a tool, a political weapon against people. That's how unaccountable people are held by it.
Yeah, and Deborah Katz, her demon faced lawyer, came out. She just pretty much confirmed what we already knew, that the political motivation of abortion was a reason why Blasey Ford went out there and lied her ass off.
Yes. Yes,
and,
because rape was the most powerful weapon they had, because it is so shunned by society. So this is a bull nonsense statement. It's nonsense.
Yep. Intrinsic. And of course, they ignore all of the female rape statistics.
Oh, yeah. That annoys me the crap out of me.
They ignore all of the domestic violence statistics that show that female on male domestic violence is almost on par with male on female, that most domestic violence perpetrators against children are the mothers. Everything is so one-sided, because it's never really about addressing what really does ail a society and what needs to be understood better, so maybe we can actually get ourselves through to a higher evolution. And they don't really care about that. Everything is a one-sided power play. This is how you know. Anybody out there that wants to actually fix a problem, they're willing to set aside old convictions if they find that there's a flaw with it and that there's actually a light at the end of the tunnel. They're not looking for that. They want to hold on to one side, put the blinders on the people that they claim to be protecting or speaking for, and then hopefully they can make some money along the way.
A big reason, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but you touched on something that really bothers me, because I feel like men are not given the respect they deserve in terms of dealing with those issues that are prevalent the way, you know, they are. I don't have the numbers in front of me, so please don't quote me, but it's true. It happens a lot. And the reason why this domestic violence happens a lot is because of the war against the patriarchy, in that men can't defend themselves against women who hit them. They are rendered defenseless. They have no means to defend themselves against it. Let them hit her back. What happens?
Well, not only that, but there is a huge, huge stigma there that men are embarrassed to also report that this is going on.
But they can't defend themselves.
I wrote something on August 26, 2018. There's a few things here. This is when Simone Sanders came out talking about Molly Tibbetts. You remember the Molly Tibbetts murder?
Yeah.
She was murdered by an illegal alien. Mm-hmm. And she went out. She was pontificating about how being critical of illegal immigration is a sacrilege in itself. So Simone Sanders, she immediately painted the male community, American citizen or otherwise. Just, you want to talk about males. Not about whether or not it was an immigration issue. She wanted to talk about painting males with a really broad brush and blame the murder on masculinity itself. Full stop. That's exactly what it was. But I went and I picked up a few things here, and I can send it to you because there's some great, great stuff in here, especially from a really great article by. What's her name? This is from Mel Magazine. It's called What Domestic Violence Against Men Looks Like. And it's written by, I believe, what's her name? I don't know here. It was based on all of the work done by, what is her name? Either way, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to send this over to you.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I'm going to just send you the whole blog post that I had put together in 2018, and it'll give you a little bit of a situational understanding of what men are up against and what the abuse numbers really look like there, because it's sick. It's all power play, and as we all know, masculinity is completely under attack.
Well, she goes on to say, rape serves the patriarchy by keeping all women scared, ashamed, scrambling for a non-existent safety and available to men on the most unequal of terms. Patriarchy tells women their best hope of survival lies in being chosen by powerful men who will protect them. And then she says, so many responses to this think it's entirely reasonable to expect all women and children, regardless of age, health, disability, life conditions, to be armed and trained for combat 24/7, even in their own homes. Excuse me. But it's completely unreasonable to imagine and call for a world without rape. We can call for a world without rape until we're blue in the face. It will not make one hell of a difference to rape.
You know, the best thing is, once again, I was saying this about the climate change situation. You have a bunch of ninnies that are out there looking to make these amazing statements about what we need to do with the climate or what we need to do about rape and masculinity and all the problems that they have. But they don't go where the problems really are. Nobody's really going to go after China when they eventually do everything that they want to do without caring about anybody else. Nobody cares. They care about beating up on Americans and taking their lunch money and all that. They don't care about the real rape cultures in the third world that they're trying to import into Europe and America and shaming you for being xenophobic and racist, for being skeptical about the culture clashes that will inevitably ensue. They don't care about any of that stuff. Instead, they paint and they attack American males or European males as being these ticking time bombs of rape, and they completely tear them down. They start injecting gender confusion into the mix over here, and it's really sick, because then what you start seeing is a culture that is devoid of any kind of traditional masculinity, any kind of virtue that used to be there to make sure that rape and abuse was
doesn't happen.
was thoroughly punished.
Right.
In private. There was no waiting for a judge.
You're right.
You know, what do we look like? What does a society without strong, virtuous men look like? It looks like a society that is run by the Harvey Weinsteins of the world. And that's exactly where we are right now. So feminism has created this awful environment, and boys are being abused and looked down upon and labeled as just ticking time bombs of rape from the moment that they're able to talk and understand what is being discussed around them. And what do you expect? What does anybody expect?
Thank God I don't date. Thank God I'm married. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
Because you know how hard it is to find a good man? Like a man, not one of these pansy ass idiots. Jeez. We're going to change the subject a little bit for the last bit of the show here. Brennan's angry jumpsuit, or orange jumpsuit, my bad, just tweeted out that there are two FOIA releases. This is 15 pounds to go on Twitter. There were two FOIA releases today. The first one was about the records of communications concerning Hillary Clinton from January to October of 2017, which I still have to read. And the other one was records concerning the 25th Amendment, which is Rod Rosenstein emailing back and forth about the news story about his 25th Amendment discussion. Now, there's a good bit of it that's redacted, but from what we can see, the first email chain that we can see here, Frank, because you remember what this was all about? Rosenstein was talking to Andrew McCabe.
About wearing a wire?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is internal conversations between Rod Rosenstein and others at the DOJ responding to inquiry by Adam Goldman from the New York Times before he wrote the story. He writes to the DOJ, to Sarah, who must be the press chick there. Mike Schmidt and I are preparing a story on Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. We've learned the following things. We'd like a response later this afternoon. And the bullet points are that in a meeting on May 16th, 2017, Rosenstein raised the idea of wearing a device to record his conversations with the president. He specifically used the word wire and also said McCabe could wear a wire. Then in a separate conversation around that time, Rosenstein and acting FBI Director McCabe discussed using the 25th Amendment to remove President Trump. And Rosenstein said he could get Sessions and Kelly to go along with it. In a conversation on May 12th in the command center of the Justice Department, Rosenstein appeared upset and emotional over the Comey firing. And then in a conversation on May 14th, Rosenstein asked McCabe to reach out to Comey to seek advice about appointing a special counsel. McCabe believed that was a bad idea. Rosenstein considered appointing Jim Cole as the special counsel. So that's the email that gets sent to the DOJ. And then Sarah Flores forwards it along, and Harvey Eisenberg, whoever that is, ends up writing, "Hey, Rod, she just called to inquire about the story the Times apparently just placed that you allegedly were going to invoke the 25th Amendment and wear a wire. Wanted to give you a heads up. She's calling around." And then Rod Rosenstein writes, "Thanks. Hopefully we are being successful and the reporters are having difficulty finding anybody to comment about things."
So what do you think that's about? Maybe is it obvious and I'm just not seeing it?
I think that they're hiding something. Like, why are they telling their people to shut up if it's not true?
So it wasn't sarcastic, the remark. He was actually thinking about wearing a wire.
I don't know. They had some kind of a plan in place. He says, "Hopefully we are being successful and the reporters are having difficulty finding anyone to comment."
Well, let me ask you something before we go on with this. And that is, for Rod Rosenstein or anybody to wear a wire and clandestinely record any kind of private sessions with an American president, that would require that would require a warrant as well. No?
Yes.
That would require, I mean, you can't, that would, because on the other hand, you wouldn't be able to present that evidence to a courtroom and have it be admitted if it was ill-gotten. So
right.
Even the idea of him going and wearing a wire and collecting evidence on a president to potentially take him down and out, the entire premise would have to be justified by something. Has there ever been any kind of inkling as to whether or not there would be some kind of authorization outside of these private conversations that could be spun one way or another, whether it be sarcastic or serious? Is there anything that would authorize this?
No. What I think they were planning, if this is true, is to leak it and then use the media to spin it to bolster impeachment.
But even that would be very risky, because how the hell would you ever the leak itself would point more toward who the hell is recording the president illegally.
For smart people. Not for the Democrats.
Yeah, well, I guess if you're the only thing you're worried about is public opinion, I guess that's one thing.
If you need public opinion for impeachment and you have no other way, and you think that whatever the president's saying behind closed doors is enough to get the people like, oh, my God. Like they did over this damn map that he drew on, which I thought was hysterical, by the way. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw it. I took a look at it because I saw all the trending topics, but I quickly looked the other way. So this is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And the worst part of it is they hijacked the hashtag for the hurricane so that people in it couldn't find what they needed about the hurricane. So all I kept seeing when I was searching to find out what was going on was, oh, President Trump drew on the map to France. Who gives a crap?
Yeah, and then I saw people saying, this is a crime. This is a crime to alter a national weather. you're talking about crime. Oh, they're talking about crimes now. They're taking a Sharpie marker on a weather map more seriously than treason and sedition. That's it. Forget about treason and sedition and illegal spying. We don't like where the Sharpie marker showed up on a weather map.
And not for nothing, he was right. I'm sorry to say, was he working off of some older data? Absolutely. But he was right. It was forecast to hit Alabama. It was. Anyway, so back to this. So, you know, it appears from that comment that they told everybody there's a gag on this for whatever reason. Don't say anything, or they put some kind of like anti-talk to reporter strategy in place so nobody could give comment. But you would have to assume that the people would have given comment and affirmed that would have done it anyway, regardless of what Rod Rosenstein told them. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Very weird. It's only 14 pages, this one.
It is very weird. Odd thing. And honestly, that's the first time I ever asked myself the question about.
It's a good question. It's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, there are because. It actually makes me think that maybe it was all sarcasm, because there otherwise you would have to have something to fall back on. Because one thing is, okay, if you want to have a quick injection of public opinion, you want to be able to go out there and influence public opinion in some way. You're going to inject the public with some kind of information or some kind of a sound bite. But still, anybody out there is going to say, how the hell was this taken? Who was in that meeting? Who could it have possibly been? And where was the authorization to record a private conversation with the president and then leak it to the public? Where was the authorization for that?
He's the deputy attorney general, and McCabe was the acting FBI director. You can't get really much higher than that.
I know. Exactly. Like, so, I mean, but still, written authorization. That would have to come from a judge.
Yeah, technically.
A judge would have to say, sure, yes, you can wear a wire because there's sufficient evidence that the president is engaging in some kind of nefarious activity and you can go and record this. But even then, you wouldn't leak that to the public. It would only then be admissible in some kind of legal proceeding. So I don't understand the whole. It doesn't make sense, because even for these very knee-jerk reactionary operatives that were inside of our government at the time, they would have to have some kind of protection. I mean, look at what James Comey did with his memos. He thought that out pretty pretty clearly to know that, okay, I'm going to have sufficient protection with the selective leaking of memos and giving such and such to a friend and this and that. And he knew that he had a couple of layers of protection that could be, that can wiggle him out of a sticky situation in court with that one. So, this whole 25th Amendment and Rod Rosenstein and recording the president thing makes no sense. No sense. It's too much of a gamble just to give the public something more to hate or suspect Trump about. Because
I hope you're right. That'd be great.
I don't know what I'm right about. I just know it makes no sense.
I hope you're right, because that would mean it's not true. And that would be wonderful.
Well, either way, it didn't happen.
No, it didn't. And before we go today, I want to tell everybody, listen to, speaking of people wearing a wire inside the White House to try and spy on the president, take a listen to Bongino's show from yesterday. In the middle somewhere, he talks about this new lawsuit that Jay Sekulow is filing against Jim Comey to find out what he was doing with the confidential informant that they were trying to use inside of the White House. And I can't get into it right now, but you guys should definitely listen, because it's a good story that's going to come to fruition soon. It was like we talked about Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and their conversations about Mike Pence's chief of staff and using him to cultivate sources inside. Mm-hmm. And this kind of compounds on that. So make sure you listen to it. And I had like 4 tweets that I didn't get to that I wanted to discuss today, but that's good. It was a good show. And we'll be back on Monday. You've been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Mini Vacation Val.
And I made it through the hurricane beans. You guys can listen to us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com. See you Monday.
Later.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Hey, everybody. Duffified Live this week. We got an amazing guest. Look, I started a show on Food Network called Opening Night. It aired last week. It made me super happy to have that happen. I'm glad you guys were all out there to see it happen. And one of my things that I wanted you guys to see, and one of the reasons why I'm so happy that the first episode was what it was, is because we are talking about Jen Royal, an unbelievable human being, a great lady who is so passionate, so headstrong, and so confident about what she wants that it made me really proud to have her as that first guest on the show, because of the fact she's a rock star. She goes after what she wants, but she's also smart enough to know what she doesn't know. And she was very open to a lot of the things that we had to say on the show. And she fought back where she felt that she was going to do something, that it was going to be something different than what her vision was. And initially, she started off as that lack of confidence, that not so secure person, even though she was deep down inside, because she had never opened a restaurant before. She trusted other people. And when I finally got on site and was able to kind of guide her a little bit more to be able to hold her ground and stand up and have her voice, I thought that there was a big change that happened. So ladies and gentlemen, do me a huge favor for this week. Welcome to the Duffified Live Show, Jen Royal of Table in Boston.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.